The text you have before you, the page labeled Christian Martyrdom, Sharing in the Passion and the Ministry of Christ, consists of a number of things. We would be looking primarily at the two timelines with their explanatory text, which take us from the time of Christ up until the middle of the 4th century, until about the year 370. And in the middle section, various renditions of an inscription, or rather of graffiti, that is called the Alexamenos graffiti, which is the first known depiction of a crucifix. It's a parody of a crucifix, as a matter of fact, but it gives us some insight as to how Christians were regarded and how they were mocked in about the year 200 or thereabouts. But let's look first at the timelines. If you look at these, they are done in such a way as to indicate when the emperors, whose names are given in white against a purple background, are directly involved in or actually instigate the persecutions in a specific way. You'll see that in the first timeline, Nero and Domitian have red lines that touch them, that is to say, that go into that purple portion, whereas the red blocks, which indicate persecution, do not go into the names of the emperors during the 2nd century, during the 100s. That's because there is no official policy of persecuting Christians, strictly speaking. There is persecution, but it isn't directed from above. That is to say, it isn't by imperial decree. It's primarily a response to local mistrust against Christians who are members of, at that time, a proscribed or forbidden religion. If you drop down and look at the other timeline, you will see that here, in the 3rd century in particular, beginning with the reign of Septimus Severus, there are some persecutions that are much more thoroughgoing. I've indicated them by having them cover the entire length of the timeline, or significant portions of it. Septimus Severus, Decius, Valerian, and then the persecutions under Diocletian and Maximian Dia are the ones that are particularly significant in this period, and they are specifically directed from above. They are directed by the imperial authority. The reason for these charts is to give us a sense of the different epochs of martyrdom and persecution, and to help us realize that there really are differences in regard to the reasons why Christians suffered and how Christians were regarded during these periods. If we look at the first timeline that takes us from about the time of Christ to around the year 200, you'll notice that the persecutions are very sporadic. In fact, the first under Nero really is confined to the city of Rome. And the persecution under Domitian, which is very brief, is also fairly localized. After that, persecutions under Trajan, Antoninus Pius, Marcus Aurelius are in broader areas, and in some cases are slightly longer lasting, but notice that the characteristic of these persecutions is that they are intermittent, and I've indicated them in different places to give us a sense that they are in different parts of the empire. A person could live for many decades and never experience Christian persecution. So the church could grow and in fact flourish and develop in certain areas and not be subject to persecution, and then suddenly a persecution would happen. And this tended to create a rather unsettled mindset in some senses, to provide a thing intermittently and without clear warning can be much more destructive, can be much more psychologically debilitating than something that is going on constantly. The persecutions, particularly during the 100s, were intermittent. And if you read the text, it'll describe in a little more detail the fact that they were not primarily the result of emperors trying to deliberately persecute Christians, but rather were the result of the response in the local provinces, very often to misunderstanding and a kind of mistrust of Christians, who already in the time of Nero, as we've seen, were regarded as people who hated humankind. They banded together. They were seen as being separate from society. They wouldn't participate in the public ceremonies that involved religious sacrifice to the gods of the empire. Christians were seen as being separatists and probably dangerous, and terrible things were said about them. Things like the accusation that they worshipped the head of a donkey, that they engaged in incestuous or even cannibalistic banquets. All of these things were said and generated a certain amount of hostility towards Christians in the early decades and even in the early centuries of Christianity. The Alexamenos graffiti, if you drop down to it, is a kind of a reminder of this period of mistrust. From around the year 200, this inscription or graffiti is found in probably what was the school of pages, boys who were being trained to work as servants in court for high civic officials. And one of the boys in court has drawn this graffiti against one of his classmates, against Alexamenos, who obviously was a Christian, and the young man is depicted as raising his hand in a salute, in a kind of a gesture of worship, toward what is obviously a crucified man with a donkey's head. And this is intended to be a parody of Christianity, and the inscription, Alexamenos worships his God, is given in Greek. Now, this is from the city of Rome around the year 200, and it's again a reminder of the fact that the Greek language was the international language of Rome itself. If we look at the second timeline, the timeline that takes us from about 200 to the 4th century, to the 300s, this is a reminder of a different kind of period. It was beginning in the 200s that there did seem to evolve a policy of official persecution directed by the imperial authority against Christianity, but intriguingly, it was also during this period, after the graffiti that we've just looked at, that Christianity becomes increasingly popular among the ordinary public, and Christians begin to be regarded with less suspicion and more awe and, in a certain sense, trust. People begin to realize that Christians are those who genuinely care for the poor and the disadvantaged. And the Christian religion is astonishingly, from the perspective of the religions of pagan antiquity, a religion that seems to be associated with people who care not only for the poor and the disadvantaged of their own community, but who actually reach out and care for others as well. Christians are willing to help out in times of distress, particularly in plague and in famine, and share their goods even with their pagan neighbors. And despite the accusations and the misunderstanding that the graffiti remind us of, little by little, Christians tended to be regarded now in the provinces by ordinary people as people who are trustworthy and, in fact, compassionate, more compassionate than others. As we'll see in the 4th century, when there was an attempt under the Emperor Julian, a nephew of Constantine, to try to return the empire to paganism, he was forced to try to encourage and even to force the priests of the old religion to undertake the same kind of compassion towards the poor which the Christian clerics were known for having and which had not been a tradition among pagans. So this compassionate approach, which began to be known more in a more widespread way, especially in the 200s, became so characteristic of Christianity that when pagans tried to recover their popularity, to again win favor with the people, they had to shift their approach. And pagan priests who had never had any interest in taking care of the poor or being particularly solicitous for those in need suddenly had to undertake this in imitation of the Christian clergy. A fascinating reminder of the fact that the understanding of Christianity was changing. But at the same time, as the empire became less stable, which it was becoming during this period, it was clear that it could not be maintained in the size that it had had previously. The emperors were constantly responsible for maintaining the borders and discovering how completely unwieldy the empire was, as we'll see when we look at the period of Constantine and his predecessor Diocletian. The empire simply had to be divided up. It couldn't be managed from a single location. And this instability was something which was a source of great concern, obviously, to the emperors, and many of them blamed the instability of the empire on failure to maintain Roman traditions and, in particular, Roman religion. And so Christianity, which was becoming more popular during this period, was by certain emperors, especially the Decian, Valerian, and then especially during the persecutions under Diocletian and after Diocletian, Christianity was singled out as an anti-Roman religion that had actually angered the gods and which was in some sense responsible for the instability of the empire, and which had to be destroyed for the well-being of the empire. Now, this was very different from the approach of the emperors during the 100s, who, although in some cases knew about Christianity, were largely indifferent, or in the case of the emperor Marcus Aurelius, who was a philosopher, perhaps mildly contemptuous towards Christianity. The other thing to be aware of is reminds us not just of the milieu, but of the fact of martyrdom. Christians who were willing to give their lives rather than participate in the state religion were a kind of a frightening reminder of a tradition that invited people to make a full and complete commitment of themselves, which eventually caused the anti-Christian emperors to take notice and in many ways to become very concerned, negatively concerned, very frightened about. Especially important, as we shall see, is the witness of virgin martyrs, of women who are willing to give their lives up once they're accused of being Christian. And they stand as a powerful reminder of the fact that there is an alternative to the Roman approach, which particularly looks at this life, at life in this world, and the Christian virgin martyr would basically say, I don't need your society, I don't need your arranged marriages, I don't need your guarantee of economic success. I have a meaning and a purpose for my life that exists in heaven with my celestial spouse. And that witness, which was clearly seen, and that of course is what the word martyr means, was a tremendous sign of identity and identification for the Christian community, and a very alarming and provocative kind of statement as far as pagan Romans were concerned. As we'll see, the martyrs were regarded as models and as witnesses, those who participate now in the Passion of Christ. They continue, in a certain sense, the Passion of Christ in our own day. They are powerful examples, and in the case of bishop martyrs, teachers as well, living exemplars of the faith. They are intercessors, people who pray for us. We'll see that particularly in the case of Saint Perpetua. They are people who can intercede for the weak. They are the heroes who are willing to endure and remind those who are too weak to bear witness that it is possible for human beings to do that, and their prayers are believed to have the ability to provide a kind of intercession even for those who have been so weak as to sacrifice to the gods and become apostate and then become excommunicate, that the prayers of the martyrs and the confessors can be a part of their reconciliation with the church. So, with that in mind, we'll look now at the example of particular martyrs.